The Tom Woods Show, episode 2056.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, a lot of your friends believe that deregulation caused the financial crisis of 2008 just as fervently as they believe that lockdowns are the solution to COVID-19. For the sake of our future, both of these ideas need to be smashed, so check out my free ebook, The Deregulation Boogeyman, over at regulationmyths.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. I am delighted to welcome back to the program the great Adam Curry. You may remember Adam as one of the early MTV VJs. I certainly do, growing up. But since then, Adam has been something of an internet entrepreneur, a pioneer in podcasting. He's really there right at the beginning of the origin story of podcasting. He's been the co-host with John C. Dvorak of the No Agenda Show, which I highly recommend. And what I want to talk to you about today is something he's been working on that will help to keep podcasting as the relatively censorship-free medium that it's been over these however many years. And he's got a solution to a problem that could arise. It's arisen a little bit, but podcasting has largely carved out a space of its own. I wonder how long that'll last. So Adam is already anticipating the next problem. And as a podcaster myself, I have a vested interest in this and how it turns out. And as listeners, you likewise have an interest in this. So, Adam, welcome back to the show.
Oh, Tom, whenever I get a notification from Tom Woods to be on the podcast, my heart skips a beat.
You're much too good. Much too good of a person. Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I love what you guys do. I love on your show the audio clips that you play and then you comment on. It's that I just can't bear to listen to these audio clips. You know, I want to comment, I just don't want to do the listening part. But what you guys have done during the dystopia has been really, really great. And I remember back when I started podcasting back in 2013, you know, you said an encouraging word to me on Twitter. And I thought, how about that? This Adam Curry guy is even cooler than I thought. So that's why I thought of you today, because what I'm thinking about right now is podcasting per se, because right now we've got YouTube taking people's material down. They don't really give you much of an explanation. And there are other platforms too, where at the drop of a hat, you could just be disappeared. But podcasting up to now has, at least more than these other media, has managed to escape this. I've not had a podcast episode taken down from a podcast app. I'm sure it's been done, but it's never been done to me. But it seems to me that this loophole, the podcasting loophole, is unlikely to survive in perpetuity. I assume you feel the same way.
Well, I felt that way almost 2 years ago to date when I looked around and saw that a couple of the things that we had set up well with podcasting were on the verge of breaking, and I decided to fix it. And we've done that.
Well, talk about that. And I said in the message I sent to you, I think I said this, I need you to explain this to me like I'm seven. Because if there's a lot of tech stuff, that's not where my specialty is. I want people to get, for example, what does this expression podcasting 2.0 mean?
Well, Tom, this was indeed another part of the reasons why my heart skipped a beat, because you posed that exact question to me. You said, can you explain podcasting 2.0 to me as if I'm a seven-year-old?
Okay, I did say that. Okay. Yeah.
You did. And I was very surprised by that an intellectual such as yourself would take this tactic. I typically, when I see that on Twitter, it's usually people say, as if I'm a five-year-old. Seven-year-old, I thought, well, you know, and I really had to think about it. And I really appreciate the challenge in hindsight. I will explain it to you as if you're a seven-year-old, and then we can get as deep into the details as you want.
Good. Okay.
Podcasting 2.0 ensures that your favorite podcast can never be taken down, erased, or removed. Podcasting 2.0 updates in your app under 60 seconds from the moment your favorite podcaster publishes. Podcasting 2.0 adds almost 15 new and growing every day, new features such as chapters, so you can have chapter marks with images and links to relevant information per chapter, transcripts, which are searchable, soundbite, which is like a trailer that you want to highlight for the episode. We are very close to complete comments that work between podcast apps, notifications when your favorite podcaster goes live, and you can listen to that live stream. And most exciting, It gives you a way to support your favorite podcasts with money in real time through micropayments. It works with all your favorite podcasts, whether they're 2.0 or not. All it takes is to use a podcast that is podcasting 2.0 compatible. And there are many established ones that have features now built in. And there are about 15 new ones that you can choose from at newpodcastapps.com.
Okay, so newpodcastapps.com must be the key thing, because what I was jotting down here was, could you run through, just to explain how easy it is, what are the exact steps that I, as a user who say, yes, Adam Curry, I like the cut of your jib, I want to be part of this, what exactly do I do?
As a listener or as a listener. Podcast?
First, as a listener.
Try a modern podcast app. You may already have a podcast app that has these features, but if you go to newpodcastapps.com and you can search by what operating system you have, so iOS or Android, there's a number of desktop. There's also a surprising number of very good web-based apps, which work incredibly well. And they even will have next to each app listed how many of the features it supports. From that, you can import your existing subscriptions. It does import of OPML. Most podcast apps do that. So your subscriptions are portable, but you can just try it out. I mean, it costs nothing to try it out. You get them from the App Store, most of them, except for the web-based ones. And then you search for your favorite podcast. And I mean, the next step is probably the most interesting one. If you don't see any of the new features, then contact your favorite podcaster and say, hey, you know, you can go to podcastindex.org and you can learn how to upgrade and use these new features. But most importantly, out of the box, every podcast is not erasable in a podcasting 2.0 app. Every single one will always be in there. It's not going to go away, no matter what it is.
All right. So now let me think about it from the point of view of a 7-year-old podcaster. So I want to do this because, number one, it gives my listeners a better experience. But secondly, I have to also think about myself here. I do it as a form of self-defense, because there's a way in which, by using this, I should be less fearful that there could come a day when my content simply disappears.
Right.
So the way I do it is I use a service called Libsyn, and they host the episodes. I mean, I'm explaining this to the audience, Adam.
You're a very wise 7-year-old, Tom. I'm liking it.
I know you know what Libsyn does, but they host the episodes, and it's a link to Libsyn that basically everybody is using, whether they realize it or not, from all the different apps. But if one day, I don't know what would happen with Libsyn. I don't think Libsyn itself is going to pull the plug on me.
Correct. They won't.
But Apple Podcasts might say, we're Apple and it's our job to censor things. So, you know, we don't like Woods here. It's conceivable that that could happen. They pull the plug on me, but if I'm a podcasting 2.0 podcaster, that doesn't mean the end of the world for me?
Well, here's the good news. Without you even knowing it, thanks to the effort of myself, Dave Jones, Eric Mackey, and a cast of hundreds, you are already podcasting 2.0, because anyone who listens to your podcast in podcasting 2.0 app will never experience this, whether Apple erases you or not. And Apple has done that. This is one of the reasons why I started this. So that is the easiest thing as a 7-year-old podcaster, is to tell your listeners, hey, make sure you're using a podcasting 2.0 app, then it'll never be interrupted. Now, with Libsyn, it's interesting. I can just tell you, we have this dance between developers of apps, which we have well established, and hosting companies. Just today, in fact, about half an hour ago, a hosting company called Castos just announced that they are releasing every single podcasting 2.0 feature, most importantly with the streaming micropayments built right into their hosting system. With Libsyn, you can actually go in and add as many of the new features as you want. They don't make it easy. They don't have it built into their interface yet. There are many hosting companies that have that, such as Buzzsprout or RSS.com. These are also listed at newpodcastapps.com. You can either move to them. There's many self-hosted solutions. There's many ways that you can make your podcast feed more podcast 2.0 compatible by adding more features. But out of the bat, the uncancelable part, we built that for you. It's working. There are 15 new apps and many established apps, including Overcast, which access the index and therefore your podcast will not be erased.
Wow. So let's go back in time a little bit just to remind people of your role in all this. Can you just summarize it? And I want absolutely, if I detect the slightest bit of humility in here, we're going to start the whole thing over again.
Ah.
I want you to tell me the real story of Adam Curry's role in the actual development of podcasting itself.
In 2000, I was living in Amsterdam. I'm going to try to go as fast as I can because it's a longish story. But the genesis was I saw cable modems and realized that the crappy experience of clicking on something and waiting for it to download for 5 minutes before you could listen to it could be solved by having something running on your computer that would check for a new episode or a new whatever you're looking for, download it, and then tell you it had it. So it was really time shifting, very much like, you know, we got to streaming in a way that's also time shifting, like Netflix, et cetera. And I conceived this idea, went to Dave Weiner with it, who had developed RSS. Lots of people know what RSS is if you've had a blog. And I said, why don't we add this as like an attachment? And then on the other end, you know, you can have an RSS aggregator that is looking for some new attachment, downloads it, and then tells you that it's there. I convinced him, he built it. And then nothing happened until I saw the iPod 3 years later. And I said, this is a radio receiver. This is not a digital Walkman. And so I built a little Apple script that literally would get one of these RSS feeds with an MP3 file attached to it, download it. It was still, the iPod had to be connected to your computer. Then it would update the iPod. And in the morning, you had your new quote unquote radio shows. It even showed up in the playlist. You know, it was crazy. That started to grow. Steve Jobs contacted me, said, I want to put this into iTunes. Are you okay with that? And I fought him, of course. You know, I was like, yeah, okay, Steve, yeah, whatever you want. I made a critical error at this juncture. I took radios for granted. Being a radio broadcaster, radios are always around. They're in the car. You got a transistor radio. You just boombox radios. You got radios everywhere. I thought that there would be plenty of radios, i.e. podcast apps, but didn't realize that the scale of the number of podcasts and the length of feeds and how they're created would really be too much for singular apps to manage almost on any platform with any decency. It would drain your battery, really, because it has to be checking things. And so that became centralized. And because of this error of my ways, Apple became the de facto on-ramp to podcasting. That's not okay. Even though they were good stewards for 10 years or more, they also decided when just before the pandemic hit or the lockdowns to deplatform Alex Jones and a number of other podcasts, did it in unison with other big tech companies, was very disappointing. And because of that, most of the podcast apps had come to rely on Apple as the central index. And then those podcasts were left from those apps as well. That's when I called up Dave Jones and said, we're going to fix this. We have over 4 million podcasts in our index. That's almost double what Apple has. You got to wonder.
Wow, wow, wow. All right. Well, this is really important. So I should basically be telling everybody listening that ideally, you want to go to newpodcastapps.com and reimagine how you're listening to podcasts. And it's not going to radically change. It's not going to be a big learning curve or anything, but you're going to be part of something important.
You're part of something very important. And as you explore apps that have implemented these features, you'll start to see the benefit and how incredibly, like for instance, you know, I do several hours a week of content and that we'll be taught, like, didn't we talk about this somewhere? And so first to be able to find the episode is one thing. I can usually find that. But then I can pop right into the transcript, search, click on the word, and it starts playing right at that moment in the podcast. I mean, this is invaluable to me personally as a podcaster just to listen to my own stuff. I mean, there's all these fantastic things. And then once you get into, now I know that you have a subscription model and I know it's extremely successful and you know, as a supplement, you could consider looking at the streaming value for value payments. People will do it anyway. In addition, I'm sure they'd be more than happy to. But one really cool feature is the Boostagram, where you can be listening to the podcast. You can press a button in a new podcast app and you can enter a little message. It's very analogous to Super Chat on YouTube. And then on your end, Tom, you would hear literally pew, pew. And you look over and you see how much the donation was or what the number was that was sent and the message. I mean, these are all things that are really tightening that interaction between the audience and the producer. this is really starting to take off.
Well, it's thrilling. I'm glad that there is such a thing out there. You use the expression, though, that I think you use on No Agenda sometimes, value for value.
Yes.
Just explain what you mean by that.
Yes. 15 years ago, almost, when we started the No Agenda show, we decided that we could not have any advertising because we would never be able to speak freely, even if it was just about products that we did or didn't like. And we weren't interested in that. The production turned out to be a little more work than we expected. And we said, well, in order to continue, you have to support us. And very quickly, we came to a model, which at the time was not coined value for value. That came a little later. And the concept was, look, you just listen to an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours of us. Compare that to any other experience you pay for, like sitting in a movie theater for an hour and a half. Maybe you took a date, you got some popcorn, had a drink, $50. Are we worth $50? Or maybe that's too much for you. Maybe $5 is a lot. With media products, someone's gem of a podcast that helped them get through the pandemic to someone else's piece of crap. So, you know, you can't really determine that value except on the receiving end. And it turns out, if you ask people, and we have 15 years of experience, if you ask people, just send us whatever you think this was worth, you get a lot of people sending $5, but you get a surprising amount of people sending $500.
Yeah, that's true, especially when you think about, like, you release one podcast on a regular basis that's very long. I release a series of smaller podcasts that are episodes that taken together probably amount to one No Agenda show. But if you were to say to people, all right, well, let's break down how much $5 a month would be. I mean, that's, what is that, 25 cents an episode? Do you think that you're getting at least 25 cents worth an episode? When you put it that way, and I myself, when I support creators I like, I think, well, gee, yeah, I'm getting way more than 25 cents. In fact, sometimes I think about, frankly, the value and the pleasure I've gotten from some yes. music I bought 30 yes. years ago, you know, for 10 bucks.
So you're explaining it exactly. And so it's not typical that people will donate to our podcast every single show. In fact, that's atypical. What is typical, and you do have to do one thing as a podcaster, and I learned this from my wife, who is a semi-retired, career-long, nonprofit professional in the chief communications officer, says the number one reason people do not donate to charity is because they weren't asked. And so when you ask and say, hey, support us with whatever you think it's worth, you will see that people will skip that part. They won't register, it won't do anything. But then somewhere down the line, certainly in the case of Tom Woods, I would say, you know, based upon the guests you had, the information I learned, I made a really smart decision in my career. I made a really smart decision in how I manage my finances. I made a really smart decision in how I am with my family. That was worth something to me. And he'll send you $300. That's what we see continuously. But also, I'm never cease to be amazed by what people find value to be as it comes to numbers. I mean, I think the last time we spoke, I might have told you that we call them producers, not listeners, because they do more than, they give us their time, talent, and treasure, said that she had benefited so much from the show during the past 2 years. She said, here's $10,000. Said, that's what it was worth to me. Now, she may have $10 million in the bank, so that's her level that makes her feel good. It's her satisfying her own, I don't know, it's like it's a thing in your DNA. Everybody has it for some reason. We have a thing as humans. When someone does you a solid, you kind of want to give it back to them, you know, one way or the other. It doesn't have to be an equal amount. Doesn't always have to be that. It's value, you know, and for one person going out there and what we call hitting people in the mouth, making people listen to the show, they'll tell me about it. Say, hey, thanks, man. That's really valuable. And I mean that. And if that's all you do for the rest of the years you listen to our show, that's valuable to us. And that's what you can give to us. And that system evens out. It's really weird. I can't explain it other than the most critical thing, this is speaking to podcasters now, is to release your show on the same day or the same time, more or less, that you do consistently, because people build their lives around that release time, which is why one of our important things was, we don't want you to have to wait 6 hours for Apple Podcasts to tell you the damn episode is available. Boom, under 60 seconds, you got it. And also remind people that you're doing a show. Learn how to put together a newsletter. you know, you have to have different signals to alert people that your show is coming up the day before. Remember to support us. It's a hurdle for many people. Certainly established show business people. It was hard for me in the beginning too. It felt like I was begging. What the hell am I doing? I'm used to getting hundreds of thousands of dollars, just for showing up. Now I have to ask people to send me money. It feels wrong. But once you see it work and once you see how happy people are and how they utilize numerology to encode their messaging even right into their donation amounts, you get sucked in and you never want to turn back.
I get so many 1776s when people say,
yes,
I have a...
of course.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
I want to make an individual one-time thing. And well, you know, it's interesting the way you're describing this. You're not saying that podcasters have expenses that need to be paid, so you should help defray those. That is true. They don't have that many, but there are some. And good web hosting and stuff, you know, costs money and all that. But it's more a matter of, even if you didn't need the money, I just want you to have it.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a give and take. It's you gave me something, I'm giving you something. And the example that really stands out in my mind is Jordan Peterson. Back before he had a podcast and when he was on Patreon, he was getting $800,000 a, I don't know if it was like a month or a year. It was some enormous amount. And everyone knew it. Everybody knew he was getting an enormous amount. And they sent him the money anyway, not because they thought he'd be in the poorhouse without it, but just because they felt like, you've really helped me find meaning in my life, and that's worth something to me. And I want you to be stinking rich because, doggone it, that helped me. And I like that kind of model. That's why I help people who, yeah, okay, probably they're not going to lose their house if I don't donate, but it's the right thing for me to do to donate.
So two things about that. One, it's very critical to close the loop in the podcast and thank at least the top donors or, you know, have some way of thanking most people most of the time. What we do, what we've chosen to do, is we not only thank the people, we give you the amounts they donated. You can sit there with a spreadsheet, and for 15 years, you could chart out our growth, our income. You'd have to make some assumptions about subscriptions and stuff, but in general, you could get a pretty good idea. People have done this. They started Reddit groups. Oh my God, I can't believe these guys. And you know what? Crickets. Because you're exactly right. No one cares. They just want the product. And that's the reminder. You know, it's like, if you don't go to the store and it's a local store and no one goes, then all of a sudden it's gone. And then you're sorry that it's gone. And that's the simple promise. If you don't support it, then it's going to go away. You support it more, the better it's going to be. Now, this is critical because you mentioned Patreon. That is the other piece the seven-year-old podcaster needs to understand, that the money system we built into Podcasting 2.0 also cannot be deplatformed.
Yeah.
And Patreon has deplatformed. PayPal has deplatformed. We now have MasterCard, which is a processor. They actually process underneath outfits like Venmo and PayPal, all same company. They are deplatforming. And, you know, today it's the OnlyFans person you like to send money to. Or maybe it's the CBD person that is deplatformed for money. Or maybe someone who's selling marijuana legally in a state legally that is being deplatformed for money. Maybe it is a sex worker that's being deplatformed for money. All of these, this is bullshit. This is not okay. So we have developed a way that even if you are deplatformed from all of the mainstream payment processing methods, which is proven to happen for idealistic reasons, for political reasons, whatever it is, it's stifling of free speech. And I think we can agree that in this case, money is also a form of free speech. This is literally text. Bitcoin fixes that inside Podcasting 2.0.
Hey, folks, just a brief message. It's been years since we've caught up with Bad Luck Ichabod, but it's time. Poor Bad Luck Ichabod, stuck in the same rut, doing the same things over and over, finding no joy in his life, never trying anything new, his spirit crushed and devastated, never letting that creative side of him get out and flourish. Well, thank goodness you're not Bad Luck Ichabod, because you, thanks to Ole Woods here, know about Skillshare, an extraordinary platform, one membership to which gets you access to thousands and thousands of fascinating classes on subjects ranging anywhere from film, anime, animation, photography, and design, all the way to software development, time management, and more. The Woods daughters have used it to improve in various of their artistic endeavors. Woods here has used it for better time management and organization. But whoever you are, there's something for you. Short to the point classes, support from a community of fellow creatives. It's an extraordinary experience, and you're absolutely going to love it So don't let your spirit be ground down like poor bad luck Ichabod. Be good luck you by giving Skillshare a try. So explore your creativity at Skillshare.com/woods, where our listeners get 1 free month of membership. That's a free month at Skillshare.com/woods. On a somewhat unrelated topic, I'm sure you've talked about this, but I'd love it if you could share with my audience what your thoughts have been about Joe Rogan and Spotify.
Absolutely. So there's two things going on here. Yes, there was a woke contingent that wanted Joe Rogan censored off of Spotify. There's a lot of, actually very funny, there's a lot of misinformation about Joe Rogan, so-called misinformation. And the first things are, he doesn't work for Spotify. Spotify licenses the programming. No, they never took Alex Jones off. Joe could keep certain things in the beginning. There's just all kinds of misinformation. But what's happening right now is different. And you only have to look at the mainstream news channels to understand. When it was really about Abigail Schreier and Joe giving a platform to trans hate, which it wasn't, or whatever reason they've come up with, you know, the mainstream news would, they would say, oh, podcaster Joe Rogan's taking the heat today for trans hate, whatever it is. They called a female athlete a dude. Okay. Just little blips of kind of show busy news. But the minute Joe Rogan had people on that start to persuade people to take a better look at the products the pharmaceutical companies are trying to get into us, then all of a sudden, the biggest advertising category in television, pharmaceutical, activates their stooges in cable news to go and discredit Mr. Horsewormer, all of the bullcrap that they spewed across Joe Rogan's bow. That's because the pharmaceutical companies are the enemy here. They don't want Joe Rogan convincing people to not use their products. And if you look at the numbers, and we've seen it over and over again, they're literally going, the pharmaceutical companies are going to CNN and MSNBC and NBC and CBS and ABC and yes, Fox. And they're saying, hey, we've got to stop this. We cannot have Joe Rogan influencing people not to use our product. That's what's going on here.
I appreciate that analysis. I've been observing the Neil Young, Joni Mitchell thing. Then after Neil Young made his announcement, there was what turned out to be a false rumor about Barry Manilow taking his music down. He clarified that on Twitter.
That was hilarious.
He said, that didn't come from me. Because I remember thinking, it doesn't seem like him, because this was a guy who, back in the day, had the stones to say publicly that, I quote, I agree with almost everything Ron Paul says. That doesn't sound like somebody who's going to...
No, but this is different, Tom. What you're seeing from Neil Young, and most artists, I would say, really despise Spotify, not because of what Spotify is doing necessarily, because Spotify, if you look at their history, they're really just a peer-to-peer sharing platform, and they feel that artists really should be paying them for the privilege of being on their platform at all. And so they have a very different view. But the problem is the statutory streaming payment agreements, which, you know, artists now know you get 6 million streams, you get, you know, $5.95 out the back end. They hate that. They hate what's happened to the music business. And so now they want to punish Spotify any way they can. I mean, just before all of this, go look at what Eric Clapton, Roger Waters, what all these guys are saying about it, even Elton John coming out. Everyone's, that's funny. Elton John coming out and saying, hey, you know, we're getting screwed by these payments. And, you know, they focus it on Spotify, you know, to build a pressure campaign telling people, which is not going to work, hey, you know, we're not making any money in this new normal that is streaming payments. That's why they're all angry. And this is just the kind of a sideshow which is being abused by mainstream because, you know, it's kind of funny. You know, the memes are good.
But did you think there was a possibility that there still is one, that there could suddenly be a cascade of artists, maybe even under fan pressure, taking their music down from Spotify and this crushes Spotify? Is that a plausible scenario?
What I think is plausible is that a competitor pops up with more favorable terms. That's plausible. And I think, yes, I mean that, and I'm looking at maybe Jack Dorsey's Tidal, which he purchased, which is a very odd purchase for him, but I've been waiting to see what he pops out of the woodwork with. I, of course, have my own solution, which we should probably get into another time because I can't really show it, but I know it'll work. which is based on the same value for value principle. You know, here's what I'm seeing is people who have nothing to lose. I mean, if you've already sold half of your catalog for $50 million, it's a lot easier to say, hey, go fuck yourself, Spotify. But, you know, that's basically what Neil Young did. I mean, you know, most artists from that era have already licensed out their music and they've taken the, you know, the retirement payment, which is cool. So, you know, Spotify did exactly what they should. It's like, oh, you want your music off? Boom, you're done. You know, Neil Young didn't remove it. Spotify went, okay, no problem. So, you know, no one supported Taylor Swift when she asked for this boycott. And Spotify wound up doing a deal with Taylor Swift. On the podcasting side, it's almost hilarious. No one of any mainstream stature is calling for Joe Rogan to actually be deplatformed because they all have podcasts on Spotify and they all want the possibility of the $100 million payout. They're the phoniest of the bunch.
Ah, good point.
Phonies, big phonies. So, we didn't see people support Taylor Swift. You know, why would they do it now? I don't think so. But a competitor could pop up and they could say, yeah, you know, there's more to be done here. And they would have to bring their audiences with them. I think personally, the established artists, they don't have to worry too much. And no one cares about the rest. I mean, this is another problem we have to fix when it comes to music. But it will also take a while and it'll involve some work.
You know, I have so many other things I could ask you about because now that live music has resumed, I mean, hobbled, very much hobbled, but it has resumed.
Yes.
We could have a very interesting conversation about that because I remember you being very pessimistic about the future of, I think it was about the future of live performance and what's happened to the music industry. And I think there is a great deal to that. And I think smaller venues, I know of one right here in Florida, that would be available for some of these really like fifth tier acts. Like a death metal band is not going to play in Madison Square Garden. It's going to go,
Imagine this. You don't need big to make it. Imagine this. Here's an idea that can be implemented today if some developers sat down and did it. You go into the venue, you open up your app, and it's a Lightning app. It's some kind of Bitcoin-related app. It's very simple. It's like Venmo. And then there's screens up there. And as you're standing there, as you're watching the band play, you can boost them Satoshis. Your message could show up on the screen if you even wanted. You could be sending them money in real time when you see the solo, hit the boost button. Versus, you know, if you've ever seen the Versus live streams, we got one DJ against another. Holy crap, we can do that with scoreboards. You're only sending micropayments, but a whole bunch of micropayments makes up the door. You know, these things are all possible. So if I said that, then I rescind and I'm not so negative about the future of live music with this technology in our hands. Because it's about money, ultimately. It's not about great musicians, not about great songs. It's about money. You need money for the venues, it has to flow. So I think we have these networks now where we can program money. Anything you could think of doing, hey, lift your beer glass. Oh, you just sent some money. We can do all these things.
I just wish, or I hope I'm not engaging in wishful thinking when I say that some of these vaccine requirements to get into venues are going to be short-lived because they're not going to make more people feel safe to go there. That's the lie. They're going to make more people say, screw you, I'm not going.
Well, yes, this is where we need another hour and a half. But I will say the things that we are left with as we start to come out of whatever this, you called it something, you had a good name for it earlier on. I forget. But this atrocity,
yes,
we lost our cash money. We lost that entirely. It's gone. It's not coming back. It's all going to be digital. And there's plans for that. We lost a lot of things. What was most interesting and surprising was something we gained. And that was the QR code came roaring back. And this is part of the control mechanism. This will be with us for a very long time. There will be check-ins. It depends on how hard we push back against these things. I do think it comes down to your local city councils, your local governments, your state governments, you know, apply whatever country you're in. We got to have that local pressure to push back on that. Because when we accept that lifestyle of checking in, and which of course we're totally conditioned to. I mean, gosh, it was only 10 years ago that Foursquare had every idiot checking into every venue everywhere. So, you know, this is now coming back and it's going to be expected of you. And it won't be based on, I don't think it'll be based on vaccination status, but it will be based on some kind of status in the future. This is the exact thing we have to fight.
Well, I'm prepared to do whatever. And so far, I've in addition to talking about it, I've tried to vote with my feet in that I had an opportunity. I was going to a concert and I could have gone to it in Atlanta or I could have gone to it in Nashville.
Right.
Atlanta, they required vaccine proof. And Nashville, they didn't even require a negative test. So I specifically wrote to the venue in Atlanta and I said, your policy on the website seems to be evolving, so I can't tell. Are you requiring vaccine proof? And they said, yes, we are. And then I wrote back and said, okay, I'll be going to the show in Nashville then. Just, you know, maybe I'm the only one who wrote to them to say that.
No. You know, I do the exact same thing. First, I wrote a letter to the CEO of United Airlines and said, I will never fly your airline again with your policies. We want to go on vacation. We haven't been on vacation in over a year. Just need to get out. You know, I can't go to the Netherlands where my daughter lives because of the requirements of the EU. I can't go to Hawaii where my wife has never been because of requirements in that state. And we looked around and you know what? Aruba. Okay. Aruba. They said, come on in. Everything's good. And believe me, I'm writing to a couple hotel managers and saying, I didn't go to visit. I didn't go to, and I'll write to that idiot Macy Hirono in Hawaii and say, hey, you know, I didn't visit your fine islands because of this. I do that. I definitely do that.
It's important. They need to hear because unfortunately, the crazy people who demand that they wear a mask or something are right in their faces. So it's important to make sure they understand that we also have to be appeased. You can't just appease the crazy people. You have to appease the normal people too sometimes, you know?
Well, and then maybe this will be my final thought and something to expand on. Ultimately, this is not about your health. I believe all of this is a financial problem. And that is the real problem. We have to keep our eye on what is happening with the Federal Reserve, with this enormous amount of money that has been created. The velocity of that money, you know, together those do give you true inflation, not the CPI numbers. Something went wrong in September of 2019. It's obvious it was analogous in like the overnight repos. There was stuff happening that looked like 2008, 2009, only worse. It appears that anything would have been fine to use to close down the economy for a bit. And that's where I think this came from, whether it was coincidence, whether it was hyped up and we should have been less fearful of fear itself. I'm not sure about that. But I'm seeing everything pointing towards a real financial issue as the root of the cause of all of our malaise at this time.
Well, we will leave it off there. But with the action item that folks listening should go to newpodcastapps.com, I'll link to it at tomwoods.com/2056.
Thank you.
And support what Adam is doing here. Not to mention, you know, I have a podcast here with plenty of episodes to keep you busy. But if you should ever get to a point where you say, look, Woods just ain't pumping them out fast enough, or let's say in tandem with the Tom Woods Show, you really like the No Agenda Show, which you can find. I think it's noagendashow.com?
Yeah, or .net. We have them both. Yep.
Okay. All right, good. So I'll also link to that on our show notes page. And someday when there's been a decent interval, let's say, I'll get you back and we'll talk about the 999 other topics we could have hit.
Well, yes. And I always, as I said in the beginning, I'm always very excited to be talking with you, Tom. And likewise, I would like to ask everyone to support your work. And I know that you have your new subscription, sir. I hope everyone got in on time to get in on that. You had such a tight time window. So it doesn't matter how you support your independent media, you got to support them. Otherwise, they just go away. And I very much look forward to knocking some more bottles off the wall with you.
Thanks a lot, Adam. And I am liable to be in your neck of the woods sometime in the next 6 weeks. So I might...
Tom, steaks on me from K&C Cattle. I met my rancher. I've got the best beef in Texas.
Oh, all right. I'll drop you a line. All right. Thanks so much, Adam. I appreciate it.
All right, Tom.
All right, folks, a quick music note before I let you go. Now, I know some of you are going to say, oh my gosh, Woods is talking about music. Turn it off as quickly as possible. No, hold on just a minute. I'm not telling you about my crazy music that for some reason you stubborn people refuse to admit is the best music in the world. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about something that one of my listeners did. One of my listeners created an album called The Movers of the World, and it's inspired by Atlas Shrugged. That listener is Barry Kuze. He wrote and produced it. He's a supporting listener of the Tom Woods Show, former Wisconsin State Chair of Young Americans for Liberty, features Matt Thompson of King Diamond on drums, as well as a special appearance by Tim Ripper Owens, formerly of Judas Priest. It's available on iTunes and Amazon, but you can bypass the military-industrial digital distribution complex by ordering it directly from themoversoftheworld.com. And by the way, if you want to get a discount at themoversoftheworld.com, take a wild guess what you're supposed to do. You type in Woods at checkout, and you get 15% off plus free shipping within the U.S. And by the way, my favorite part of Atlas Shrugged is the 20th Century Motor Company speech. I actually sat and read that out loud to my daughter Regina one day, and I feel like it just inoculated her against all evil in the world. And there is a 12-minute epic on this album called The 20th Century Motor Company. So check this thing out. Support a supporting listener. Support a fellow Tom Woods Show listener by heading to themoversoftheworld.com. Use coupon code Woods at checkout and let's support each other. And speaking of support each other, if you would like to get publicity like this for a website you are thinking of creating, before you get your hosting and get set up, check out tomwoods.com/publicity to find out how you can get free publicity from me, plus other bonuses that will help make your life better. And none of them cost you anything. You just got to get your hosting, sometime. And if you get it through my link, I'll give you this, plus membership in my private bloggers group where we help each other out, bunch of free tutorials, a whole bunch of things. Doesn't cost you 1 cent extra, but it's a way for me to help you and you're helping me. So again, the details on that can be found at tomwoods.com/publicity. I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.